Tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
All right.
Monday, February 11th, the year of our Lord 2013, and you are listening to Let's Talk Politics with Frederick Wilson. This is, in my own personal opinion, the best internet radio political show ever. Of course, my opinion is biased, but I do have some good information for you tonight, and I'm glad you tuned in. Tonight, we have something special. Now, we're supposed to have Jacoby Pittman on with the Claire Wright Mission, but some things came up, so she's not going to be on tonight, which frees us up for a little bit more time to go into some detail of some things that's happening. We're going to talk about this Stand Your Ground issue. I'm going to give you an update on Trayvon Martin. We're going to talk about this Second Amendment thing, this gun right thing that keeps going on and on and on. And after that, we're going to be blessed with Mr. German Shannon L. of Blacksonville.com. He's going to talk to us about some history, black history facts. And when I say black history, I don't just mean black history. I mean American history. I mean history of Africans and African-Americans all across the world. So this is that time of month. It really should be that time of year, but that's all right. We're going to stick to it the month, and we'll build from there. But again, you guys, stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Politics with Frederick Wilson. Be back in a moment.
A small, inexpensive plumbing problem can quickly become a large, costly issue if not addressed now. Allow Jayco Plumbing to provide you with expert service.
On time, every time.
Give Jayco Plumbing a call at 404-702-8896 for your free estimate. Call 404-702-8896 today. Do you have tax issues, owe back taxes, or need tax relief? Contact L&B Tax Service today. L&B offers you over 15 years of expertise and first-class tax service for individuals, professionals, and business owners. With nationwide service, you can easily find a location near you. Contact one of our tax professionals through our website, lbtaxservice.com. That's www.lbtaxservice.com. L&B Tax Service Incorporated. Tax professionals that you can trust.
You are listening to Let's Talk Politics with Frederick Wilson on the Survival Radio Network, the network you can't live without.
It's 2013, and it looks like we survived the main end of the world prediction. So what do we do now?
Well, as your big brother, it is my duty to inform you that you should keep learning, trusting in God, and striving to be a responsible citizen.
What does responsible mean?
Responsible means accepting ownership of your own destiny and understanding that all actions have consequences. Some are good and some are bad.
But whatever the consequences,
Silas.
I knew that. Whatever consequences are, you should accept them and not blame others for what you do.
Exactly. If you accept responsibility for your life, then you believe that you can do or be almost anything you want to be.
What does that have to do with this show?
It's simple. Once we accept responsibility for our government, then we will study the issues, make educated decisions about them, and support those in political offices that share our same ideas.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
Not really, but there is more to it than that. That's why we should pay attention to this show. Duh.
So, without further ado, here's Frederick Wilson.
All right, folks, you heard it from the mouth of babes. Again, that's my nephew, Solomon and Silas Dixon, chiming in and endorsing what we're doing here. So I hope you guys listen, because somewhere I read somewhere says that a child shall lead them. But anyway, I digress. I've got to give you the call numbers right off the top. So if you want to call in, feel free. Looking forward to hearing from you. It's 917-932-1078. Again, that is 917-932-1078. And if you want to pass that message on to your friends, They can also log on to www.ltpolitics.us. Again, that is www.ltpolitics.us. Now, let's get down to business, folks. Let's get down to business. But first, I got to do my usual. If you guys are just tuning in, this is Let's Talk Politics with Frederick Wilson. The purpose of our show and every show is to build a better voter that will help us build our communities, that will help us build our country, and also the world. That sounds like a monumental task, and I understand it is, but we're going to take baby steps, a little bit at a time. So what we like to do is we like to stay nonpartisan as much as possible. Of course, everybody has their opinion, but what we need to do is we need to first study the facts. So what I like to do is to help you, and you can help me as well, develop what I call your political philosophy. And what that is an understanding, your own personal understanding now, of what you think our government should or shouldn't do. Now, with that, then you take action and support the people, the officers, the parties, the movements, whatever it is that you agree with, and vote against the ones that you don't. But in order to do that, we got to take a step before that. We have to understand how the government works. First tenet of government, the government does not make money. It taxes people and redirects the money that it taxes to whatever the leadership says it should go to, for supposedly the public good. Notice I say supposedly, because if you look historically, we've had corruption all the way around. And that's one of the fallacies of man. If you're a Christian, you know that we started off with Cain slaying Abel. We started off with the first one with Adam and Eve. So it's in us to not do right. And my personal belief is, since it's in us to not do right, it would be real smart of me to make sure that somebody else has as little control over me as possible. So I personally believe in limited government. I personally believe in more of an individual responsibility. But that's my belief. I have mine from my years of experience, my years of learning and understanding, and I need you to get yours. Classical economic thought is limited government. All right? But since I told you my personal opinion, now I have to tell you the other side of it. I need you not to believe me. I need you not to trust what I say, because I need you to do your homework. Because after all, I could be lying. After all, I could be flat out wrong. But if you decide to make a serious decision off misinformation because I lied to you or I was just sincerely wrong, you're probably going to wind up where you don't want to be. That's where it comes back to the individual responsibility. I've done mine. I need you to do yours, too. We're going to do this together. So now that I got that out the way, the air is clear. One more time, the call numbers, 917-932-1078. 917-932-1078. Let's talk about this issue. And we got a whole lot of things coming aboard, so I'm going to hit one quick, just a couple things that's happening right now. Tomorrow, don't forget tomorrow, the State of the Union Address, the first one with the new president, well, not the new president, the first one of the new term in office. President Obama's going to speak. Said he's going to focus on the economy, which we really need. Of course, after that, please pay attention. We always have rebuttals. Since he's a Democratic president in office, the Republicans are going to say something against what he said. They're going to have the rebuttal. The Tea Party's going to have the rebuttal. And the Democrats are going to give a little summary and agree with them, pretty much how it always goes. If it was Republican in office, it would be the opposite. Republicans would smooth him over and say how great he is, and Democrats would be trying to find loopholes and holes in the story. It's the same process. All right, so please pay attention tomorrow, the State of the Union Address. It usually happens about 9 o'clock. So check that out, pretty please. What else is going on in the world, folks? And I'll take your calls. You might have a question on that. Let's deal with this. Let's get to it. Trayvon Martin, if you're not familiar with that story, he's a young man that was, some people say, murdered. Legally, you can't say that until somebody's convicted, but he definitely was killed about a year ago now. What was happening? He was from Miami, went up to Orlando to visit his dad. Went to the store, little convenience store. He walked in the night, got him some, I understand, Skittles and a Coke. That's the usual, what people say. On his way back home, going through this gated community, one of the members there, David Zimmerman's his last name, George Zimmerman, excuse me. He's a part-time neighborhood watch guy slash wannabe cop, couldn't pass the test type guy, called the police all the time. He sees this guy, and he says he looks strange. Mr. Zimmerman calls 911, says something strange about this guy. They said, look, we're going to follow him. They said, we don't need you to do that. He decides to do it anyway. Somehow or another, he catches up to Trayvon, and a fight ensues. Boils down to it, the fight ensues. Mr. Zimmerman was armed, shoots Trayvon. Trayvon is now dead. Zimmerman's arrested, and here we are on his trial. All this time goes by, and we have doctored up 911 tapes, which makes you wonder why they do that. We have controversial people, Spike Lee, giving out Mr. Zimmerman's address, home address, which is unprecedented and very dangerous because folk crazy. You have George Zimmerman saying, hey, if he could all do it again, he would do it all over again because maybe it was right for, maybe it was just Trayvon's time to die. This is crazy. But the bottom line is we're dealing with, they try one argument, it's supposed to be the stand your ground law, which means that it was a justifiable homicide. Because Zimmerman says Trayvon was beating him up. And he does have the beat up face and the blood all over the place to show that Trayvon was a hitman. But on the flip side, people say, hey, well, if you wasn't following this man and maybe scared him, he probably wouldn't attack out of the blue. But here we are. What are we going to do? Let's take back. Should the man say he be able to defend himself? Well, you stand your ground law says that you got to be in your home. You got to feel threatened. And a couple rules that go by that really don't quite meet the stand your ground laws, especially since this guy was outside. This is a doozy, folk, and it's going to set some precedents. We had Jesse Jackson down and Al Sharpton and a whole lot of civil rights leaders coming down. But we'll flip to the other side. Let me take a quick call. I have a caller on here. Caller, TJ, you are on the line. What is your question or concern, sir?
Well, I just wanted to jump off subject a little bit, you know, with the stand your ground thing and the whole situation. It has, you know, caused for concern. Do you think at this point we need to revamp that whole political system and how that law came about or that, you know, that particular rule? Because we do have a lady that's in jail right now for shooting a hole in her own roof or something like that, or
yeah,
in her own floor.
Yeah, right here in Florida.
Something's got to change with that. And I'm just trying to get from a political standpoint, what can we do to get a real definition, a working model of what stand your ground means? Because this guy, Zimmerman, may get away with murder.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the call. That is a great question, caller. But one of the things we have to do, we do need to narrow down what is what and what is not what. The problem is with law, the way this law is written is so arbitrary, it's up to your interpretation. But some things are clear, like I just, of course, happened to look this up on the Sunshine, the Florida statutes, and this is 776.013, home protection, use of deadly force, presumption of fear and deadly ground and bodily harm. There's certain criteria that need to be met in order to be on, to be exonerated if you have to murder someone or shoot someone. A person presumed to have held reasonable fear of imminent peril of death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another one using defensive force that is intended likely to cause death or great bodily harm. And it goes on a couple of things. It says the person against whom the defensive force was used was in process of unlawful or forcefully entering or had unlawful or forcefully entered a dwelling. Now, we look at the case of the lady that shot in the air and is in jail now. She was claiming that her husband had been abusing her for a while, and she just got fed up. And she gave a warning shot as opposed to actually shooting him. And not to get into all of the background information, but that was against the law. Now, some people say, hey, you may have been better letting him hit you one time or threatening to hit you and then just shooting him, and you would have met the criteria. Okay, you were under bodily harm. But the way it's played out and the way the court system saw it, she was not in imminent danger. She was more mad, which turned it into murder, like premeditation, because they're saying that she had an opportunity to leave. But since she didn't, and she said, look, I was. A lot of times a caller is not about what's the truth or what you can prove to be true. It's crazy like that. But we definitely need to have an understanding of these laws. And this all goes back, because this will jump in, and some people that are against the gun laws will go ahead and tie it down and say, hey, that's why you don't need guns. We wouldn't have, Trayvon wouldn't be dead. There's a young man that was at the gas station that was murdered about three, four months ago. He wouldn't be dead. That's right here in Jacksonville. There's people getting killed all over the place. We look at the tragedy that happened right on December the 14th, the murdering of the little innocent kids in school. So it comes back to, well, what about these guns? We don't have to have a gun law if we just get rid of all the guns, right? Why would I need a gun law if nobody had guns? Well, the Second Amendment says we have a right to keep and bear arms. Now, of course, we know the amendments go back to the 1700s when the Constitution was written. And we have to understand that the only way this country became free was not by England saying, hey, you guys just go ahead and separate from us. You can keep all your resources, any taxes that you owe, anything that I might want out of the future, you can just go ahead and have that. No, that's not how it happened. The settlers over here, the colonists, if you will, over here, were upset with the government. They tried to work it out. They sent petitions to the king, King George. He refused to listen. The old term you hear in all the elementary courses and high school courses, a taxation without representation. That's what it came about. You kept asking more money from me, but you didn't ask me how it affected my lifestyle. So what happened? We had a rebellion. Now, it couldn't be a rebellion if they didn't have guns. Because England had one of the most powerful navies in the world at the time. You cannot defeat your enemy who has guns if you don't have a gun. It makes it very difficult. And that's one reason why they wrote that into the Constitution. Even the Declaration of Independence said, if a people is being oppressed by the government, it's not only their duty, but it's their responsibility to overthrow that government and start a new one that is just to its people. But here we are today with gun law or gun rules and people saying, hey, no one needs to have a handgun. I say different. What say you? I had a caller, someone sent me a message that just said, hey, we don't need to have handguns. We just need to have the police to have handguns. Well, caller, I know you're listening, but who are they to have a gun and you can't? Again, my thing is, I don't trust anybody, really. I don't trust you if you're a Democrat. I don't trust you a Republican. I don't trust you because you're a police officer. I don't trust you because you're anybody, because we're human beings and we're subject to flaw. So what happens if someone kicks in my door, they have a gun and I don't, or they know I don't? Am I more vulnerable? Do they feel more complete? Do they feel like they have the advantage? I say, yes, caller. I really can't see that argument, caller. Well, I should say texter. I really can't see that argument on that side as far as me as a citizen not being able to have a gun. I have another one here. Somebody's saying, well, should we have any kind of gun? Of course not. We shouldn't have any kind of gun. I mean, who needs a bazooka? I mean, we do have to have some kind of stability and some kind of understanding. But texter, no one to have a gun at all? But who the government says can have a gun, or just the government employees? It's the government, if you look historically, that oppresses people. Hitler was voted in office. Mussolini, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro, still going now. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. All these guys get in office and gradually start taking people's power away, start taking people's independence away. And the last thing, or one of the last things you do, is you take away somebody's ability to defend themselves. And right before that, or right after that, I should say, you take away their right to vote. Hence, we have slavery. That's the means of Africans that came over on this ship. What do you think would happen if the government only had guns and people don't? What kind of environment would we be in? Picture me. Now, I'm a criminal. I'm going to get me a gun on the black market. I know you don't have a gun because it's illegal. And I like law-abiding citizens. They make easy prey. So when I come to you, what are you going to do? Give me everything I want, including your life if I deem it necessary. Look at the schools. Criminals know there are no guns in schools. We can't have a gun in school zone. That's why that guy can go into school and shoot the little kids. We have one resource officer at a school I know. We share him between two other schools. One resource officer with a gun, and he's got to go between three schools. Now, president, his kids have armed guards. Never understand that because, of course, he's a president. They take one of his kids, they can have undue influence on him and make him do things. I mean, he's a big decision maker, one of the most powerful men in the world. But his kids aren't any more special than mine. If I had some. Are they more precious than yours? Just wonder. If you're going to take the guns away from law-abiding citizens, how do you get them away from the non-law-abiding citizens? That's a question. All right, folks, what I want you to do is I want you to ponder that point. Because I have German Shannon on the line. He's going to come back with some black history that's going to blow your mind. I'm going to give this guy a proper introduction. But I'm going to give you call numbers. We're going to take a quick break. You guys stay tuned. This is the time where you call all your family and friends. This is the time where you get your sons and daughters around and listen to this guy speak. He's got knowledge upon knowledge, all right? Call numbers, 917-932-1078. Again, that is 917-932-1078. And we will be back in a few short moments. Stay tuned, folks.
Two questions. How's your New Year's resolution going? And how can the world's leading weight loss challenge get any better? Well, the 90-Day Body of Ivy Challenge is offering you a chance to join the challenge for 90 days, 100% risk-free, 100% guaranteed. Go to 123shakes.com and find out why over 6,000 people a day are joining the 90-Day Challenge. Try on your own challenge for 90 days, 100% risk-free, 100% guaranteed. You're going to love this, or are you going to stay with your unresolution? Go to 123shakes.com. Get your challenge on.
All right, folks, I thank you for coming back to us. Now it is time. It's time to hear Mr. German Shannon. Let me give you an intro. I've known this brother for probably 12, 13 years. He's very inspirational. He's a hard worker. He's an entrepreneur. And he's taken the time to study. I'm going to say it again. He has taken the time to study for himself. And not only does he study for himself, but he counseled with other learned brothers. This guy knows about, he's going to talk to us about the Moors. He's going to talk to us about the history of this country. He can talk to us about religion. He can talk to us about politics. He can talk to us about education. This is a well-rounded brother that I have tremendous respect for. He's also one of the founders of Blacksonville.com. If you're not familiar with that, just look it up. Blacksonville, BlacksonVille.com. Not a racist organization, not all about black people. Just take a look at it for yourself. But I'm going to let this young man right here speak. So without further ado, you guys, give me a warm round of applause for Mr. German Shannon L.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, my brother. It's good to be here on the show today. I appreciate what you're doing. Let's talk politics. There's no better time to have relevant politics than today in 2013. So I appreciate this opportunity, and I've been seeing your growth and your progression with the invitation, and we are happy to be a part of that community and just sharing information that the people need.
I thank you, brother. It's good to have you in. It's definitely good to have you in. I can't say enough good things about you, but I want you to drop this knowledge on my listeners like you drop it on me. All right? So the first thing, now I tell you guys, this is Mr. German Shannon L. Now, what does that L mean?
Well, L is basically, L means the source. It is the first an original Hebrew term used for God in the Bible. So when we say let, when God created Adam and Eve, that God that's mentioned in the Hebrew language was El. Throughout the Bible, you have different Hebrew, I guess you could say, phrases used in different terms to apply to God. When we say God, we're talking about, in most cases, the Most High Creator. But most people don't know, if you use God out of context, you may be talking about your landlord or your master teacher in karate or something outside of the Most High God. So El is on the back of my name to remind me that the Most High God has my back, and it supports my indigenous status as a Moor, as a person of the land. I was born here. My family and all of our families go back generations and generations. But I think you said something that's most significant. No matter how true it is, if you can't prove it, then it don't matter.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you got to claim it to even want to prove it. And that's what, you know, my life is all about, claiming your greatness.
Hey, now, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Now, you guys, when I asked Jeremy the other day to be on the show, and he said, well, what should I talk about? Again, I can pull him up at any time I had a show, and he could speak with an educated voice about pretty much any subject I can think of. But I told him I wanted him to talk about some Black history, because this is Black History Month. So he hit me with something. He said, you mean the significance of it or the insignificance of it? And it kind of took me back for a minute, and I started thinking, wow, how can I tap that in and see what he's about to say? I said, I ain't going to try. How about you talk about both of them? He's like, he got me. So here we are right now. But just saying, tell me, let's start off with the good stuff. Tell me the significance, if you would, please, of Black History Month.
Well, Black History Month started at a very critical time for our people, with Prodigy Woodson in the 1920s, early 30s, 1930s, and it started as a way of exposing African culture, language, history, religious principles and values, so that we could adopt a sense of identity and purpose for ourselves at that time, during the time of a critical time in American history, during the Great Depression, and, you know, during the time of lynchings throughout the country, during the time in which Black cities such as Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Black Wall Street were literally bombed by our government. And I think it was relevant at that time, because the Negro didn't even know he was Black in the 1920s and 30s. He considered himself the Negro. So we have to relate Black history according to its relevance of the time that we live in. And that's what made me say the insignificance of Black history, because we are in 2013 and we have yet to identify ourselves as Black. Even more so, we have yet to evolve ourselves beyond our Blackness into a sense of nationhood and independence.
Okay. All right. So how are you tied in, and what is the significance? Now, we know going through high school, we learned about Harriet Tubman, or Tubman, I used to say it wrong, but it's T-U-B-M-A-N, you guys looking it up. Harriet Tubman. We know about Frederick Douglass, and we know Abraham Lincoln is supposed to be the greatest president in the world because he freed the quote-unquote slaves. We know about George Washington Carver. He made the peanut great. And what we learned about Martin Luther King, of course. And that's pretty much it. But you know, and I know, that there is a whole lot more to the contributions that African-Americans have made and Africans have made to this country, to the world, to Europe. When we look at the Kemet, we look at the Egyptians, we look at how Aristotle went over and sat at the feet of the kings and learned from them. Just go ahead and just pick a spot and just share with us, brother. Go ahead.
Well, I really prefer not to identify with any of the historical facts and leaders, you know, just for the sake of this particular time, because, you know, that information is available, which is why I say the insignificance of Black History Month, because in the 1920s and 30s, we did not have the information highway to access who we were. We didn't have J.A. Rogers to, you know, write the book, from Superman to man. We didn't have, you know, John Henry Clark and Marcus Garvey to have evolved at their highest levels to leave us the knowledge of who we were. We didn't have Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, and Malcolm X. These people, we didn't have black studies departments. You know, we didn't have Google. Now we have all of that. So we don't need to just talk about black history within the context of people, places, and things. History is what you create, what you make it. And it's relevant as now with this conversation on Blog Talk Radio as it was when David Walker wrote his excerpt in the late 1800s. So we have to evolve with the time, basically. And the black history that I like to most identify with is, I think, bringing it home, is the State of the Union. You know, there were several State of the Unions that took place that were managed by Tavis Smiley. I mean, if we just go back in history, the State of the Union has always been twofold, one for white America and one for black America. Where is black America's State of the Union to determine the social, economic, and political destiny of us as a people, as our president, our black president, will address tonight? Will we hear ourselves within the economic context that he speaks about? I don't think so. So that's why I say, is it significant?
Well, that's tomorrow night now. The State of the Union is tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yeah, 9 o'clock, right?
9 o'clock, yes, sir. So, with that being said, so you're saying that even with this black president, you're saying that we're still, our needs or needs of black people are still not being addressed. Is that what I'm understanding you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that we are not just black people. We are so much more complex than that. And to really address the needs of a people who have yet defined themselves or who have yet to be defined, it's backwards. It's like pushing the cart before the horse. I'm saying that our president, because of his status, can never address the needs of black people in America because he does not represent black people in America. His status is a free national citizen. And that's something that black people have to do, is to further educate themselves about the fact that there are two different types of citizenship in this country. One, you inherit by way of slavery. The other, you inherit by way of ancestry and lineage, being a person from the land, from the earth. We have to begin to have that conversation during Black History Month in order to advance ourselves as people.
Okay. But when you said, we know that black people, if you want to, come in all shapes, sizes, and colors. And if you look at historically, speaking of the definition of black in America, is we have 1/8 black blood.
Mm-hmm.
So why not the multicultural people or multiracial people? Would that still be up under the umbrella of black people? Or could it still be up under the umbrella of black or African American? Why not expand it? Since you say we are complex, why not expand that out to include more?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a great question. It's a very complex question because that's what we do. We complex things in this country. Everything has to be logical. It has to be rationalized. It has to be analyzed and evaluated and tested before it can be proven as fact. And even then, there has to be a couple of different authoritative associations that can research that fact. And then it has to go before a world body and then voted on for a couple of years. So anyway, my point is that if you put 20 black people in the room with me, male, female, young to old, from Jacksonville to Alaska, I'll tell you who black and who not. And they can be of all colors, shapes, and sizes. So,
how so?
Black is as complex as its origin. From blackness emanates all things. Black absorbs all things. So we're not talking about black people. That's what that's the biggest thing I'm trying to say. You're not black. I'm not black, per se. I mean, what people are defined by the color of their skin? Indians is a mixed race. is Semitic. It's a Semite, meaning semi. The Hebrews were Semites. You know, I mean, we've been duped. That's the best I can say. And it started with the Berlin Conference in 1871, when the European countries split Africa up and the rest of the world and took parts of it so that it could further determine through neocolonialism the future of those countries. And they replaced white faces with black faces that maintained the current status quo of the economic, political, social, educational, religious, language of those colonies. And now we've taken on those ideas, so we struggle to define ourselves.
Wow. That brother in conference, you're right, that was 1884.
Okay. So I appreciate that correction.
No, no, you on point. I just, you say that, I'm like, ooh, that's good stuff right there. That is good stuff. But let me ask you a question now. Okay, so we said it, the multicultural thing is deep because, as you said, all colors come from black. You said that you were a Moor. Now, I didn't know before you told me what it was. I really didn't know what a Moor was. You told me this years ago, and I looked up like, wow, that's some deep stuff. But the first time I really heard the term in public was when I was looking at Black Knight with Martin Lawrence. And in one of the scenes when Martin first saw the king, and he was supposed to be this messenger the king was waiting on, and he was the only black guy there, the king asked him if he was a Moor.
Mm.
Now,
yep.
He didn't go in the definition to know what a Moor was, and I didn't either, but I just kind of overlooked it until, again, you told me about it. Share with us, what is a Moor?
Well, Moor is a term that goes back to the first man. If I were, I would think that, you know, when we come out of our womb, the first thing we say is ma, in
okay.
a sense. Okay? Ma. That's just a natural, you know, expression of our nativity. And the word Moor, M-O-O-R, comes from, in many different contexts, but it comes from the tribe, the Moabite tribe, the tribe of Moab. And Mo comes from the root word Mu, M-U, which means water. Water is the basis, the creation, the first of the first element of all things, you know, hydrogen and oxygen. So water, H2O, is the essence of life. So a Moor is basically one who understands his nativity from the point of origin of all things. Again, with me, it's always getting back to the source. And that's what makes great, you know, debaters and people who are studied and well-read. You know, we have to deal with the facts of the matter. We have to get to the essence of things and stop looking at things on the surface. But there are a lot of other economic and political contexts that people will tell you in terms of what Moor means or what it may mean or may not mean. But I'd rather stick with that. It means identifying oneself from the essence and the point of origin of all things. And over time, black people throughout civilization have been recognized as Moors, as the first Adam and Eve of creation.
Hmm. Now, haven't the Moors made some contributions to this country?
Oh, yeah. Every single one you can count. I hate
wow.
to take up, we hate to take up all of it, but that's what we do. We build civilization. The Moors have traveled by way of what we read of the ancient Kemetians that we call Egyptians were Moors. The Sumerians were Moors. The ancient Phoenicians were Moors. These are people who, throughout time, if you really look at the Mayans, the Olmecs, the Aztecs, you know, and even up closer in time, those people that were so-called considered slaves but were free people, already here in America, were Moors. The mound builders, these mounds that we see. So these are people who over time who have maintained God's vision and God's purpose for humanity, which is to uplift humanity, fallen humanity, because man, as we read in the Bible, has fallen. And we're witnessing the last the last age and the last cycle of that time. We're entering into a new cycle. We're transitioning. That's why we're in the year 13 having this conversation. 12 represents completion. 13 represents the transition. So we as Moors are on the cusp of rebuilding civilization according to the divine laws left by our forefathers and the Creator himself or herself.
Okay. Genderless, right? The question: how do I know a Moor? I mean, am I Moor? Is George Bush a Moor? How is it something recognized or something you accept, or once you learn from yourself, you become a Moor?
Seek and ye shall find. Ask not, and the door shall be opened. It's that simple. And I think, as you mentioned, it didn't click until you heard it on television. You were preconditioned to the term. But then at some point, you eventually heard it on television and it inspired you to go deeper and deeper. But some of us just, you know, we're comfortable with the surface.
Yeah, it's definitely not me. But let me give the call numbers. Hold on 1 second. Again, it's 917-932-1078. Callers, if you're listening, you want a question, just press 1 on the phone. Press the number 1. It'll put you in a call queue, and you can ask a question. Again, that is 917-932-1078. Now, Jeremy, I got you back out. I want to get too deep, because last time I had some deep folk in, some folk were telling me, hey, you're going to lose some listeners by going so deep. They're going to start, hey, it's too much for them. So I kid you not, but this is what I need you to do, if you would, then, please. Let's talk about some circus stuff. I know it's going to hurt your heart. Tell me about Mr. X.
Mr. who?
Malik El-Hashabazz. Malik El-Hashabazz.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, give me, what kind of significance did he play in African-American history?
Malcolm played a tremendous role. He is likened unto John the Baptist, you know, who paved the way before Jesus came, if you will. And even Jesus said, you know, don't tell anyone who I am, you know, and in the sense of don't confuse the message with the, you know, the messenger with the message. And that's what we do. We tend to worship the messenger rather than really take heed to the message. Malcolm, like John the Baptist, came and delivered a message that would last us for a lifetime. And I say us, I mean us as a people. He, without compromise, matter-of-factly represented black people, the Negro at that time, as defined, you know, in America in the 50s and 60s. So he delivered a message that we will, for generations, take with us for a lifetime. But a lot of people confuse the messenger with the message.
Well, some of the things that that Malcolm X contributed, I mean, he was the first person, I think the only person to take the United States to court, per se, with the United Nations because of the treatment of black people.
Well, that was another thing he did as a trailblazer, and that effort has since been carried further by some living trailblazers to the United Nations. And there's a treaty now that's called the Indigenous Rights, Rights of Indigenous Nations, or something to that effect, the Indigenous Rights of people all over the world. But that treaty has within it, or that clause has within it, protection rights for black people, but specifically African Americans in the Southeast region, better known as Gullah Geechies. And that location, that territory, goes from St. Augustine up through Jacksonville, up through Georgia, South Carolina, up to Jacksonville, what we call Wilmington, North Carolina, 30 miles inland from the seacoast. So you have protection rights for people in America right now, clauses that are in place for trying to protect those people from the ills of health and education and poverty and joblessness that people don't even claim or don't even know, because they don't claim to be, you know, they don't have the right status. I'll put it that way. And Malcolm was trying to educate us about that 50 years ago, and we're still behind.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Now, let me ask you a question on your personal opinion. In the, let's say, the last 30 years, all right, this is 2013, so we take it back to 83. Is there anybody that you think has really been standing up for the civil rights, not just African American, but of all people, of all minority people, including women? Is anybody up there that, in your opinion, is actually fighting a real fight?
They're actually doing what?
Fighting a real fight.
Farrakhan. A lot of people don't want to hear that. Okay, Farrakhan. There's a movie right now that does Farrakhan a lot of injustice. It's called Betty and what is that? Coretta.
Yeah, the movie okay, the white with the Mary J. Blige
Yeah, well, that was written by white folks, you know, and it's on the network like Lifestyle during Black History Month, targeting African American women, disgracing a black man for the murder, with the lack of any evidence or proof, just in this, for the murder of a man 50 years ago, but this man is still living. You know, it's a shame that Farrakhan wasn't given a chance to address the movie beforehand. I mean, he's living. I could see if he would pass. But, you know, we have things like that are going on. And I think Farrakhan personally, you know, has been steadfast in his effort to uplift the black community. Regardless of what you say about his rhetoric or what may be what the media says about anti-Semitism, being him being anti-Semitic or whatever, I mean that's a hypocrisy, because we, in and of ourselves, as a people, are a part of the Jewish nation, and that's a whole other topic. So we can't. That's like you can't be anti-Semitic to yourself if you're part quote unquote Jewish. So, but we won't even go there. But just overall, he has lifted up black men throughout this country, and we're talking to the tunes of a million or more. And if you had those same black men without Farrakhan in the Nation of Islam, they would either be 6 feet deep in prison or, who knows, working for the man.
All right. But in defense of that, I read an article saying Farrakhan was not mad at Mary J. Blige for the role she played. So I guess he's kind of saying, okay, I see what you did. I'm not going to argue with it. But I have also seen Farrakhan apologizing to the daughter of Malcolm X for any role that he may or may not have played in creating the environment that got Malcolm X killed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, again, that further shows you to the, you know, character of Farrakhan. Ultimately, I don't dispute that during that time there was a lot of chaos within the nation. There were a lot of guys who had just gotten the lessons, and these people, they went crazy. They started taking them to the streets thinking they, you know, actually knew what was going on, speaking on behalf of the nation. There was a lot of jealousy and envy. But when you have a family fight, and it's knocked down, kicked down, the first thing you don't do is take it to the public authority outside the house to bring the police back home to straighten it out. That's just for black people who don't know. But see, we don't think about that within the context of an organizational body or national group of hundreds of thousands of people that are 18 to 25 and who on fire for change. So that was what Malcolm, you know, was insinuated to do or did, and that's what caused a lot of uproar within the nation, and the leadership didn't know how to control it, and people were, you know, taking positions. So this is the real deal that I'm giving you. If you really want to dig deep into understanding the complexities behind Malcolm's murder, but most importantly, understand that the government hired those men to be spies within the nation to cause confusion, to send messages back and forth, and ultimately to kill Malcolm. Yep, I said it. The government killed him, killed Malcolm. I said it right here.
Wow. Okay, okay. Now, is that the same? Now, you're talking about J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI at the time?
I mean, that is the government, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That
yes,
is.
Sir.
So,
yes,
now,
okay.
how would you tie in? Yeah, now, how would you tie in Malcolm? Now, one thing, too, a lot of people think, like, I talked to the young about the Malcolm X, they know anything. They think that he was just this big racist, didn't like white people, didn't like anybody. But that was not what he was about. And especially when he went on his pilgrimage over to Mecca. And I remember in his book, he was saying that it was the first time he really had eaten with white people and drank after white people and people of all colors, and let him realize that, hey, it's Allah, the God that he's serving, is greater than just the United States. So he had when he came back from the pilgrimage, he had a different lesson for people.
No, I don't want to say he had a different one. I think he was witnessing his evolution in his body of knowledge that he had come into. See, I don't hold to the notion that we quote unquote change. We evolve. So Malcolm, in his understanding of what he was taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for the black man, woman, and child to become an independent nation of sun, moon, and stars, to take control of their own destiny, to master their own universe, to build houses, to build community, to build nations. He believed that wholeheartedly, and that's what made him go out and build a nation, expand the nation from Detroit to Georgia all the way up and throughout the country. But he evolved into that thought process when he actually saw people of all colors and all races and all languages praying together and meditating together at the Holy Temple of Kaaba. And, you know, that's what he saw, the fruition of his thought. So he came and he spoke on that more so than just trying to rally black folks. He realized he needed all people in order to achieve, you know, this paradise.
All right, now, so we can agree that the painting of the picture, this brother was a racist and hated everybody but black people. We understand
those
that
are just uninformed. Yeah, no, nowhere near the truth. I mean, he was taught by Elijah Muhammad, and peace be upon him. Elijah Muhammad's goal was he was a psychologist, he was a scientist, he was a historian, he was a chemist. This man was a master teacher, and he knew at that time, in the 60s, you cannot fight fire with fire. So if we're evil, if black ain't right, if black is dark and everything negative, then white is evil. White ain't right. White is irrelevant and everything negative. So it was a matter of balancing the scales, at least within the mindset of black people during a time in which they were trying to have black pride, when we, you know, wanted to build black culture. We didn't need to think black was evil, but guess what? When we went to school, that's what we thought. When we turned on the TV, that's what we looked at. We didn't see no black folks look like us.
Right? I remember that. That reminds me here. Just one quick.
When
that
we
one
went
reminds
to
me
the
of
streets,
the
70s. We didn't get treated like we was human. So, you know,
right.
We thought that was fighting fire with fire. We don't necessarily have to do that now. And the Nation of Islam does not reflect that now.
Okay. And I remember what you said about the black not being right. And I remember there was a school system. This was Chicago in the 70s. And they were teaching their kid. They were showing the kid. They was like second graders, first and second graders, pictures of kids. They had a black kid and they had a white kid. And they said, tell me, choose which one is pretty.
Yeah,
and anyone
yeah.
that chose a black kid, they told them they were wrong.
Right.
And so that was
yeah.
an institutionalized mindset that if you're black, if you have darker hue, more pigmentation, then that is not as attractive as white. And that's since I was in school.
You said not as attractive. Think about if you black, you can't read a book. Like, you going to get killed if you read this book. Think about that for generations. I mean, we evaluate, you know, that ain't nothing compared to the generational, institutional racism, you know, that we've faced as a people, and we're still facing it in this day and time.
Wow. Okay, we got 2 minutes left over. What would you like to say to the listeners out there as far as getting information? If someone's listening said, I want to get some more information on Black accomplishments, African-American history, anything like that, and how can people get in contact with you if they want to get some more information, even blacksandville.com, as I mentioned before?
Well, I'm all over the Internet. That's what I do. I love to share and disseminate information. I think that, you know, we as a people, we have to continue to seek ye knowledge from the cradle to the grave. And I'll correct that. Seek right knowledge from the cradle to the grave, because all knowledge ain't good knowledge. You know, it's a lot of BS stuff out there, and we already are suffering from information overload with the multiple and second devices. I mean, everywhere you go, somebody is trying to demand your attention. But when you can internalize your thoughts and your ideas, when you know that they come from the divine source of all things, you don't, you know, focus on the surface. You dig deeper. So I encourage my people to dig deep during this Black History Month. You know, go for the gusto. You know, go until you can't go anymore. Dedicate 2-3 hours at a time. Read a book and accompany that book with a map and a concordance. You know, go deep. And I think you'll find every question that you put forth.
Wow. That's powerful stuff, folks. You heard it here. This is Mr. German Shannon L., folks. As I told you, this guy is deeper than deep. And I hope he didn't go too deep for you. I hope he touched your mind, touched your heart, and kind of said, hey, there's something out here a little bit more than what they teach us in school. Notice again, we didn't talk about Harriet Tubman. We didn't talk about Abraham Lincoln. We talked about the Moors. We talked about the significance and the insignificance of Black history. And there's a common core. That's why I like this, brother, you guys. There's a common core. And what he said, seek for yourself. Learn for yourself. Get the concordance. Learn for yourself. That's when you can speak from a position of authority. That's when you can step up and take your rightful place in this world. So, again, I thank you guys. Everybody give a round of applause for Mr. German Shannon L. Sir, thank you again, and I know we're going to talk offline. We got a lot of work to do, you guys. And thanks again, German.
Thank you. I wish you the best of success, and I look forward to being on the show in the future.
You definitely, I'll definitely call you back.
All right.
All right, folks. You've heard it. You've heard it. It was a great show. It's about time to give my little last wrap-up, a little monologue I would like to leave you with sometime. And it's rough out here, folks. We're in some trying times. And I know you hear it all the time. It's always getting worse. But to me, truly in my heart, it's rougher than it's ever been. We got a bunch of people thinking that, hey, politics doesn't affect me. I don't need to pay attention to it. We have people in the education system that don't want to be educated and are happy not knowing it and looking for some kind of government paycheck. We have a president in office that half the people, you know, 49% don't want to be there. Some people say this guy doesn't need to be in office. He's a socialist. He's not even an American. We have an unemployment at record highs since the Great Depression. But besides all that, the fix is we have each other, folks. You can't pick a better country than this place. What other country has a constitution in which we can change the laws by the vote of the people? What other country can vote a man out and vote a man in? Doesn't matter if his religion, his color, his sexual orientation. Can you name a place better than this? I sure can't. I challenge you folks, like my page, LT Politics, with Frederick Wilson. That's my Facebook page. I'll say it again. LT Politics. It's Let's Talk Politics with Frederick Wilson. I challenge you to tune in and learn a little bit every day as we go through this journey called life. We'll be back here next Monday. We're going to get more into politics. We're going to have a little bit more Black history, some up-to-date things, but Blacks are contributing now. So we're definitely going to get into the meat of the political system and work on that political philosophy that we're talking about. You guys stay tuned. Once again, I thank you for coming on. You have a great week, and make sure you look at the address tomorrow night, the State of the Union address.
And I challenge you, stay critical. Stay critical. And get involved with you and your country. All right, folks, good night.
Survival Radio Network. You can't live without it.